Today on Uncommon Stories, we will grab our favorite mug, head out to the backyard, sit on our favorite chair on the patio, watch the sunrise, and find out where the hot coffee we are enjoying comes from. We'll also look at the origins of the sweet donut we're having with our coffee. Coffee is one of the favorite morning drinks around the world. It is also a favorite after-dinner drink with pastries or a big slice of pie. And most coffee lovers know that Brazil is the largest coffee-producing country. And Colombia was the second leading coffee producer for many years. But since early in this century, another country has surpassed Colombia for the number two spot. Can you name which country that is? Think about it, and we'll find out if you're right after our story. Historians don't have too many hard facts to show exactly how coffee was first discovered, but there are a couple of legends that have been passed down through the years, which may or may not be true, but they are always interesting to hear about. One of the most notable legends is that of an Ethiopian goat herder, Kaldi. One day he was herding his goats through the mountains. Resting for a while, the goats sought food in the brush. After eating some red berries off a small tree, Kaldi noticed his goats had a lot of energy, running around and bleating loudly. Also, when he rounded them up to sleep during the night, they were still active and did not want to sleep. Curious, he tried a few of the berries himself, and he noticed he was more alert and energetic after eating them. He brought some home and told his wife of his discovery. She tried some, and the berries had the same effect on her. She recommended that her husband give them to the monks at the local monastery and get their thoughts on the newfound berry that provides a boost of energy. The monks were not impressed, and one monk even called the beans something of the devil's work, so they tossed them into the fire. The wonderful aroma of the beans roasting, however, made the monks think twice about the beans. They retrieved them, ground them to put out the burning shells, and covered them with hot water to preserve them. All the monks tried the new liquid concoction and found the uplifting effects to be beneficial, and vowed to drink it each day to aid them in their religious devotions. Soon words of the monk's energizing beverage spread, and it moved to the Arabian Peninsula and became a staple of the culture in the area. And so started the journey of coffee, or so it is said. Another legend involves a Moroccan Sufi mystic, which is one who practices Islamic mysticism. Gathul Akbar Nuruddin Abu al-Hasan al-Sadali. The story goes that al-Sadali was traveling in Ethiopia. He observed birds feeding on red berries. The birds were very energetic. Upon trying the berries himself, he experienced the burst of energy that the birds were displaying. Another version of this story attributes the discovery of coffee to al-Sadali's disciple, Omar. Omar was known to cure people of illnesses through prayer. For reasons unknown, he was once deported from Mecca to a desert cave near the Asab city. With little means to find food, Omar began to starve. He searched through shrubs and small trees and could only find red berries. Having nothing else to eat, he tried them, but found them to be bitter. He tried roasting the beans, but they became too hard to eat. He then tried to boil them to soften them. This created a fragrant brown liquid. He drank the liquid and became revitalized, so much so that he survived for days. The story spread of Omar's miracle drug back to Mecca, and he was asked to return and was made a saint. Well, I'm not sure how much truth is in these stories, but they do press upon the boost of energy and being able to stay alert one obtains from drinking coffee. And these two attributes are critical in the popularity and spread of coffee throughout the world. Before coffee became the popular breakfast beverage of choice, the fruit was mixed with animal fat to create a protein-rich snack bar, and a little later people would ferment the fruit and would make a wine-like drink from the pulp. It's interesting how people from all periods throughout time would try just about anything to make an alcoholic drink. Finally, around 1000 AD, another drink was made using the entire fruit, including the bean and the hull. Although none of these coffee bean creations had lasting power, they did help in the evolution to create coffee. However coffee beans were discovered and how they were originally made into a drink, the earliest evidence of coffee drinking and exporting and importing coffee dates back to the 15th century. It is here where Sufi Imam Muhammad ibn Said al-Dahalabani imported goods from Ethiopia to Yemen. So the beans did originate in Ethiopia. For the better part of the 15th century, coffee was used in Sufi monasteries, spreading soon to Mecca and Medina. By the 16th century, coffee spread to the Middle East, South India, Persia, Turkey, India, and Northern Africa. At first, it was primarily used in monasteries by monks and priests to keep them alert for their daily and nightly prayers and religious duties. Eventually, it made it to people's homes, and before too long, coffee houses, known as gavai kahane, sprung up in the Near East. And they were very popular. Customers regularly frequented their neighborhood coffee house and engaged in conversation, listened to music, watched performers, and kept up with current events. The coffee houses were so important for exchanging information, they were often referred to as schools of the wise. With so much information and entertainment to be had, you could call these coffee houses the first internet. By the mid-16th century, Dutch, English, Turkish, and French trading posts in Yemen discovered the popularity of coffee in the area and began buying it to sell to merchants in Europe. And by the early 17th century, it spread across most of Europe and became quite popular. Some people, however, were not so keen on coffee. Some were suspicious and even fearful of the new hot drink and called it the bitter invention of Satan. In Venice, the local clergy condemned coffee, and the controversy became so great that Pope Clement VIII was asked to intervene. He decided to taste the drink that was causing such a stir before making any decision. Surprisingly, the Pope found the coffee so satisfying, he gave his approval by supposedly saying, "This devil's drink is so delicious, we should cheat the devil by baptizing it." The controversy didn't end, but coffee houses grew in popularity throughout Europe regardless and quickly became the social centers of the cities in England, Austria, France, Germany, and Holland. In England, coffee shops known as penny universities sprang up. They were called this because for a penny, you could buy a cup of coffee and engage in inspiring conversation. Coffee houses became such big hotspots for finding out the latest news and communication between neighbors and business people, new businesses began to be created from them. One of the most notable businesses that grew from a coffee shop is Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's was founded by Edward Lloyd, who originally owned a coffee house where sailors, merchants, and ship owners would regularly gather. Lloyd would provide his customers with the latest news relating to the ship industry, and soon the coffee house became a place where marine insurance companies would meet with their clients to gather information and sell them marine insurance. Lloyd saw an opportunity and created a membership marketplace for companies and clients to do business, and Lloyd would gather information to assist in the partnerships. Unfortunately, Lloyd's was frequented by marines involved in the slave trade, and Lloyd obtained a monopoly on maritime insurance related to the slave trade and maintained it until the early 19th century. Thankfully, the company got out of that business and grew to insure everything from ocean cargo to fine arts to Jimmy Durante's famous nose, Betty Grable's million-dollar legs, and most recently, Troy Polamalu's hair, as he is a spokesperson for Head & Shoulders shampoo. Well, back to coffee. Coffee grew in popularity and eventually replaced the common breakfast drinks of the time, beer and wine. Not surprisingly, people that drank coffee in the morning began the day more alert and energized. As a result, business and industries began to see improvement in quality of work. With a cultural paradigm in the Near East and a stronghold in Europe, it was time for coffee to hit the New World. In the mid-1600s, coffee is introduced to New Amsterdam, later called New York by the British. The new beverage was received well, and coffee houses began to appear quickly. but the drink of choice in the colonies was still tea, and it would remain that way for some time, until a small incident in 1773. Some of you may recall reading about a tiff the colonists had with King George III over heavy taxes on tea. This controversy came to a head with what is now known as the Boston Tea Party. And this incident would forever change the drinking habits in the New World. After the colonists revolted against the heavy tea tax and not being represented in Parliament, coffee became the new favorite drink among the colonists, and it has stayed that way ever since. Coffee, as an exported commodity, is entrenched in the early days for coffee-drinking countries. But as demand grew, many countries wanted to start their own coffee-growing businesses. The countries of the Near East and parts of Europe were not as willing to share the coffee plants as they were to export their favorite product. And there is an interesting story how the coffee plant made its way to other countries. In 1714, the mayor of Amsterdam presented a coffee plant as a gift to King Louis XIV of France. The plant was added to the Royal Botanical Garden in Paris and took root. Less than a decade later, in 1723, a young naval officer, Gabriel Desclos, obtained a seedling from the king's plant and set out to transport it to Martinique. Despite battling terrible storms at sea, a stowaway seeking to destroy the plant, and even an attack by pirates, Desclos managed to safely deliver the plant to Martinique. But the story doesn't end there. Once this seedling was planted, it thrived, and seeds from this one plant were spread and eventually became several groves estimated at 18 million coffee trees on the island of Martinique over the next 50 years. Even greater still, the original seedling brought from France, in difficult conditions to say the least, is the parent of all coffee trees throughout the Caribbean and South and Central America. And considering South America is the leading producer of coffee around the world, that is a serious family tree. Throughout the years, travelers, traders, and colonists continued to carry coffee seeds and plants to new lands. Coffee groves gained popularity around the world and grew from tropical forest to rugged mountain terrain. New nations were established on the coffee industry, and fortunes were made and lost. By the end of the 18th century, coffee had become one of the world's most profitable export crops. And today, coffee is second only to crude oil as the most sought-after commodity in the world. From light roast to dark roast to store-bought to fancy coffee drinks at your local coffee house, we have a plethora of options to enjoy our morning, afternoon, and evening coffee. But what should we have with it? We have options there, too. One of the most popular options is the sweet, simple donut. And what a great combo. Coffee and donuts. But how did the donut come about? And how did it become such a wonderful breakfast complement? Let's find out. Although donuts don't have the detailed long history that coffee does, they've been around for a long time and have a fun beginning and an interesting route to where they are today. Archaeologists have found bits of fossilized food that resembles donuts in prehistoric Native American settlements, but there is no exact proof that these remains are linked to any pastry or donuts of today. However, it is believed that the donut is an American creation with its roots in the common treats of early immigrants. The earliest known origins of the donut comes from Dutch settlers in the 18th century to the New World in New Amsterdam. These new citizens brought a Dutch delicacy with them known as oliekakes, which were balls of sweetened dough fried in hog's fat. Not generally eaten outside of Dutch households, the oliekakes were known in other communities and were most likely copied to some degree and eventually made their way to tables across the colonies. No one knows how for sure, but eventually the pastry was created in different shapes and were dough that was fried in fat. But in one story, the donut would change forever and become the most widely accepted type of donut that would go on to be a bestseller in pastry shops and a breakfast favorite for many. The tale goes that Hanson Gregory invented the round-shaped donut with the hole in the middle in 1847 while aboard a lime trading ship when he was 16 years old. Not happy with the greasy twisted dough with the raw center he was offered, he reshaped the dough to be round and cut a hole in the center with the ship's tin pepper box. When he was home, he showed his mother his trick for shaping the dough and getting rid of the undercooked portion in the middle so it was easier to hold and the entire dough tasted good, not just the outer portion. Hansen's mother, Elizabeth, went on to create a deep-fried dough that she added spices from her son's ship, namely nutmeg and cinnamon, along with lemon rind. She also put hazelnuts and walnuts in the center to add a little more to the pastry, hence the name Doughnut. So the story goes. Even though the quick snack was convenient, and now more tasty with added spices, it wasn't until World War I when doughnuts really hit home, even though they were being eaten in the trenches of eastern France. And the story of how they got there is truly amazing. The Salvation Army volunteered to help the troops at the front line, and in 1917, four women set up camp 3 miles from the front and entertained soldiers with music, gave them treats of hot chocolate and fudge, and provided religious services. But two of the women felt there was something missing. The soldiers needed something to remind them of home. So Margaret Sheldon and Helen Perviance collected rations for dough and used shell casings and wine bottles as rolling pins. Then they filled a soldier's helmet with lard for frying dough and created braided crullers, similar to what the soldiers would find at home in bake shops. Later, they took an empty condensed milk can with a narrow tube of camphor ice to cut holes in the middle of round dough they fried to make look more like doughnuts. This did the trick, as soldiers really got a taste of home, and the doughnuts were a huge hit just miles from the front line. All of this because of the brave women known as Doughnut Lassies by the soldiers who adored them. And the women battled cold weather, wet and damp conditions, and even occasional shrapnel ripping through their tents, gave everything they had to bring a little bit of home to the troops fighting overseas. When the war was over and the soldiers came home, they didn't forget the tasty treat that lifted their spirits during the fighting they endured. They sought bakeries and doughnuts every chance they got. And the doughnut craze was on. With the aid of a doughnut machine created by Russian refugee Adolf Levitt in 1920 in New York City, doughnuts became more readily available. Levitt continued to work on upgrading his machine, and soon he was making a cool $25 million a year selling his machines to bakers around the country. In the early 1930s, a Frenchman named Joe LeBeau created a recipe for a light and fluffy doughnut with a slight glaze on top. He kept his secret recipe only written out on a slip of paper. Unfortunately, hard times hit LeBeau after he moved from New Orleans to Paducah, Kentucky, so he sold his recipe and the name he gave his doughnut, Krispy Kreme, to a local store owner, Ishmael Armstrong. Armstrong hired his nephew, Vernon Rudolph, to sell his doughnuts door to door. Later, in 1937, Rudolph and two friends were in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and with just $25 between them, they borrowed ingredients from a generous grocer and baked up a batch of Krispy Kreme doughnuts. And North Carolinians loved them. And like Levitt in New York, Rudolph had windows to the bakery so customers could watch doughnuts being made. Soon World War II started, and just like in World War I, doughnuts became a hit, again with women of the Red Cross, who became known as Doughnut Dollies, entertained the troops, and brought them doughnuts. By the 1950s, Krispy Kreme was a well-known doughnut shop in 12 states. And another top doughnut shop, Dunkin' Donuts, started in 1950 in Quincy, Massachusetts, and by the end of the decade, both shops were hotspots for people headed to work, and not just local police officers. Since then, doughnuts have been going strong. More shops have opened, and the donut aisle in grocery stores are always busy with donut lovers. So next time you're headed to work or running errands on Saturday morning, stop by a donut shop and grab a cup of hot coffee and a donut, and maybe hot chocolate if you have your kids with you. While you are enjoying the fresh aroma of your cup of joe and the sweet breakfast treat, think back about Caldy, the goat herder, and Hanson Gregory taking fresh spices across the ocean. For if it weren't for them, you might be sitting in a bagel and tea shop So, have you thought about the second leading coffee-producing country behind Brazil? It used to be Colombia, but now Vietnam has taken over the number two spot. With Colombia number three, Indonesia holds on at number four, and where coffee all began, Ethiopia, rounds out the top five. Well, there we have it. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Uncommon Stories, and come back next time to listen to more interesting, surprising, thought-provoking, and entertaining stories that are true, but probably are just uncommon. I'm Brad Greer for Uncommon Stories, wishing everyone a wonderful week. And thanks for listening.